From the Atlantic to the Pacific, from mountain crest to mountain crest, from canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos, we are pumping wattage high and low, plus streaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. It's the place to relax and hang out. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We've assembled the finest team of reporters and the most intriguing guests, and that's why we are your favorite hub in a wild world. So keep it tuned right here. And don't forget, if you go to speakingofstrange.com, you can find a live chat during the show, regular updates on weird news around the world, more information on topics discussed, and links to the official Haunted Asheville Ghost Tour. Yes, we run it even in the winter. That's at hauntedasheville.com. We're pretty much the only ghost tour company, I believe, that that goes year-round on a reservation basis.
The only real ghost company tour in town.
That's right. We're the only ones who have the cojones. We were the oldest, the original.
Not from Florida.
Not from Florida or anywhere else. Homegrown, mountain bred. You remember that guy that does the "How Big a Boy Are You"? Remember
yes.
that?
Oh, yeah. Well, how big a boy are you?
You're a good mountain bred boy, Forrest.
That's what I've been told.
Forrest is a big mountain man. How big a boy are you? We just want to make that clear to everybody out there. Here we go. We were talking about the Shatner thing. Yes, this is. I'm going to get my jollies here. Here's a little clip from my Joshua P. Warren website. A sample. Here is part of a program that I did. And I consider this an endorsement by Captain Kirk, William Shatner. Give this a listen.
I don't know about you, but stories of ghosts and the paranormal send shivers up my spine. But that's kind of fun, right? But do spirits or ghosts or whatever they are always have to be evil? Aren't there any friendly dead people out there? I hope so. But there's some people who not only enjoy having ghosts around, they can talk to them whenever they like. How? They've got the gift. Thousands of children across the globe claim they can see dead people.
Can you hear me?
Do they have an extra special sense known as the gift? Paranormal investigator Joshua P. Warren believes there could be a medical explanation for this phenomena.
A person like Faye may be capable of seeing ghosts because she has some physiological advantage in her eyeballs themselves.
Could Faye's eye have powers the rest of ours don't?
Wow, what a teaser, guys. See, if you want to learn more about that, you want to see what happens to Faye and her special eyeballs, you just have to go to joshuapwarren.com. But there it was! William Shatner knows I exist! Can you believe that, Shelley?
You are so lucky.
Yeah, she's getting the hots for me. Because, see, some ladies, they get the hots for me because I know Zach Bagans. But Shelley, you're more of a William Shatner type gal, aren't you?
Oh yes, yes.
you're no, I won't go any further. I'm sorry. So how do you like that, ladies? William Shatner. And I know Tim Beckley and Nick Redfern. You still haven't met Nick Redfern, have you, Shelley? Right?
No, I haven't.
Great guy, huh?
Nick would love her.
Yes, he would. He is a bald Englishman, very articulate. Some of his funniest lines are not permissible on FCC-regulated radio. Tim Beckley, he's Mr. UFO. And, in fact, he recently contacted me. I'd like to get him on the program here pretty soon because, you know how, he pointed out last year, 2012, two of the big disasters that struck the country both had the name Sandy in them, right? You had the Hurricane Sandy, and then you had the Sandy Hook school shooting. And maybe you've seen this floating around on the internet, but there is a still that somebody grabbed from the newest Batman movie
And apparently there's one point when, you know, Commissioner Gordon is talking about some strategy, and they show a map on screen. And in the bottom corner of the map, it says Sandy Hook. So Sandy Hook just kind of keeps popping up all throughout 2012 in these eerie ways. And Tim Beckley directed a movie over 10 years ago called Sandy Hook Lingerie Party Massacre. And this movie, and I have not seen it, I'm afraid, but the cover box looks really creepy. And this film was due to be re-released. And then all this Sandy Hook stuff happened, and I think now he's a little concerned about how this would be perceived. But I'm going to try to get Tim on here to talk about what the Sandy Hook Lingerie Party Massacre movie was about, and, you know, why is this name popping up? You find a kind of synchronicity like that in the world of the paranormal. It's like certain names are usually associated more with tragedy, like the name Reeve or Reeves comes to mind. A lot of people who see UFOs or abducted are named Reeve or Reeves. And then, of course, you have the most obvious example, what happened to the Supermans. You know, you had the original Superman was George Reeve, and he supposedly committed suicide. And then we all know what happened to Christopher Reeve, and which is, you know, a horrible tragedy. So is there some kind of an energy that is associated with a name that attracts tragedy or controversy? I don't know, but Lauren Coleman has written books about this, where he has studied news stories for decades and found these patterns and connections like that. So it all, once again, hints at a larger design behind things. And once you start digging into that, it makes you question what reality is on a day-to-day basis. And it kind of applies to what we're going to talk about some here, because Tim Beckley, he publishes all kinds of great books all the time. Global Communications. In fact, he is the publisher of Commander X. Not Commander Y, mind you. Commander X. And so this new book came out, Plans for Time Machines That Really Work, Revised and Updated Edition. How to Move Through Time and Space. And Nick Redfern, who is just into everything, he wrote a book not too long ago about the Men in Black. And so Redfern, he contributed to this new edition of Plans for Time Machines That Really Work. And there's a section here that Redfern included about his interview with me on the Men in Black. And there's even a photograph there of what you could say is my very, very first little museum. Because, and Shelley, I'm trying to show this to you, it's an old black and white photo, but my sister years ago owned a thrift boutique in downtown Asheville. And so my very, very first attempt at a museum was just taking a little corner of a room at her shop and putting some of my wacky stuff in it. And that eventually, of course, expanded into the location at the jail behind Pax Tavern. And, of course, now we have fully matured into the basement of the Asheville Masonic Temple. So that picture's in there because I believe Redfern actually took that photo. He was in Asheville, and we were doing a Dark 30 tour. And when he came into town, he actually stayed at my house, and we had a great time, he and Jim Mars. And anyway, so here's a section, and this is kind of lengthy. It's just a couple pages, though, and I think that now that we are in 2013 and we are interested in the design of the time wave and what the bigger picture is, this may be applicable. It may be time to go back and reanalyze this. So I'm just going to read this passage from the book, and I will have to pause for a break. But here's how it begins. Again, the author here, Nick Redfern, he says, of his particular pet scenario as it concerns the actions of the legendary and notorious Men in Black, Asheville, North Carolina-based author and anomalies researcher Joshua P. Warren told me the following highly thought-provoking story back in 2010. Given its importance, I make no apologies for citing Warren's words in full. Wow, that was a nice thing to say. So, and now a lot of this is a quotation from me talking to Nick. Quote, I have thought for a long time about what I call the paratemporal loop hypothesis. At first glance, it may not seem all that original as it deals with the complexities that derive from potential time travel. The hypothesis is based upon one particular testable element, and that is, if ever, in all of the infinite future, any advanced species discovers how to travel back in time, well, they will do it. It's just about the most powerful secret anyone could have, the ability to change the course of time. We go on, quote, let's say, you know what, actually, I think I'm going to take a break before I dig into this, because it's just too out there. You really got to keep up with this. I think, anyway, maybe it'll come across clearer, but you know this time travel stuff. It's always a hall of mirrors, right? Paradoxes pop up. This is not that type of a hypothesis, though. I think it's a little less wacky than, you know, if I go back in time and kill my grandfather, what happens to me sort of thing, right? We all know how that goes. This, however, is about the reality of what happens if people from the future are coming back and trying to change time. How is that going to affect us as we pass through our lives and the world around us shifts a little bit on a daily basis that we don't fully see? We just see little bits and pieces of it. It's kind of like the dead celebrities phenomenon. A lot of people know about this. One day you wake up and you hear, or you see on the news that Jack Palance is dead. And then the next day, he's alive. And you're like, well, what was this? I could have sworn I saw that Jack Palance was dead. Now he's alive again. That happens with a lot of particular celebrities. Could it be that he was dead one day, and now he's back alive again because the time loop has been shifted? I'll explain more when we come back. I'm Joshua P. Warren, talking about the paratemporal loop hypothesis. And this is the program where the unusual becomes usual. It is called Speaking of Strange.
Favorite parts of 13th Night
was the belly dancing that Kuka performed. That's what this music reminds me of. By the way, Forrest, what's the TV theme embedded in this? Can you pick it out?
Is it a recent show or a current show?
It's an 80s show. But it only pops up at certain moments. But I heard it and I was like, oh yeah, that's from this show. Right here. Knight Rider.
Okay.
It's very subtle, but it's in there. Who would think of Knight Rider being converted into like a Middle Eastern song? But yeah, Kuka is so good at belly dancing. If any of you are having a party, if you're throwing some type of an event, you need a belly dancer, trust me, top notch, five star.
You need Kuka.
She should be working at Jerusalem Garden or someplace like that, belly dancing.
Very easy on the eyes.
Absolutely. She's got the whole routine. I mean,
she's great.
She's got all the skills. You guys missed it if you missed 13th night.
Yes, they did.
Yeah, I feel sorry for you. So welcome back to Speaking of Strange. I'm Joshua P. Warren. Getting back to the paratemporal loop hypothesis. Okay, so here we go. Here is me being quoted in this piece. Quote, let's say, hypothetically, that 1 million years from now, long after humans are gone, perhaps, there is a humanoid creature that dominates this planet that has evolved from the oceans. We'll call him Fishman. And Fishman is a great scientist and has discovered how to travel back in time. And so he does this. And let's say he goes back to the year 1920. Of course, he has to do the best to disguise his appearance, or everyone will know what he is. And while he's back in 1920, he might be thinking how he could help or even hurt his own future existence. And in doing so, he wants to be careful that he doesn't harm himself in the future. On the contrary, he might even try and enhance his future life by changing something in the past that will benefit him down the road, or even something that will harm his enemies. Now, of course, Fishman will never know for certain if it's going to turn out right. If he screws up, then maybe he starts to vanish like the kid in Back to the Future. But if he does a good job, then he returns to his future and he finds that he has a better life. But by traveling back in time, he has caused a paratemporal loop. It's a separate timeline that he continues to exist on. So, continuing with this thought experiment, let's say he gets back to the future and things are better and brighter for him, and he doesn't want to jeopardize that by stating what he has done. But he wakes up one day, and everything is back the way it was before he tweaked it by going into the past, and he can't figure out what happened. End quote. Warren, however, has far more than a few thoughts on what might very well have occurred. He suggests, hypothetically, of course, that a billion or so years after Fishman called the Earth his home, along comes Bearman, who also learns how to surf time. And in doing so, he changes the carefully ordered world that Fishman created in the distant past, which then requires quickly fixing by the latter, as Warren notes. Quote, Fishman has to then go back to 1910. To correct Bearman's adjustments, and so on and so on. So now we have what seems like the plot of some bad sci-fi movie, where we have all these figures from different futures that are going back into the past and trying to tweak things to their own benefit. But if you look at this in a broader scale and consider that the future apparently has some infinity about it, then there may be thousands and thousands of these different types of beings that are each traveling back, tweaking the timelines in some way. And what makes it an even bigger mess is that they're not necessarily aware of each other. They're all just as confused about what's happening as everybody else is. I get the impression that there might be a shifting timeline that we are passing through on a day-by-day basis. One day, UFOs might be real, and the next day, they're not. The next day, Bigfoot is running around your backyard, and the next day, he doesn't exist. One day, the Thunderbird photo is in a magazine, and then when the timeline is played with again, it's no longer in the magazine. And it may be that day by day, hour by hour, or even minute by minute, small changes to the timeline are being made by these entities or beings coming back and constantly playing around with the past and the future. So things we remember in the past, like the Thunderbird photo, suddenly no longer exist in the present. If we accept it might be possible that something similar to what I've just described might be happening, or potentially happening, then somewhere along the line, we can imagine that there might be policemen, time cops, so to speak, who step in here and there, and who try to really get the scoop on all these paratemporal loops and control the entire situation, end quote. And that, Warren suggests, brings us squarely to the role and presence of the men in black. Quote, why do the men in black dress like this? Why do we call them men in black? Well, if a man puts on a black suit with a black hat and walks down the street in 1910, and you see that man, you probably notice him, but you would not think there was anything too extraordinary or too out of place about him. You probably would not. And if you saw a man walking down the street in 2010 wearing a black suit and a black hat, would you notice him? Probably yes. But would you think there was anything necessarily too extraordinary about him? No. And that's why in and around the whole 20th century, it just so happens that the black suit and the black hat will work for them. If you were to go back into the 1600s or 1700s, there would be a different wardrobe that would work within the broadest range. I don't know what that wardrobe is, but I feel confident that if I sat down with a historian who was extremely knowledgeable of the fashions from those past periods, and who also understood the concept I'm talking about, we could probably come up with a dress that the men in black may have worn at various points throughout history, in order to give them the widest range to work within at any given time. When it comes to the idea of Mothman, this brings up another good connection to what I was describing. If you have a situation in which the timelines are being constantly changed in an unauthorized way by some of these paratemporal travelers from far in the future who are unleashing all this bizarre stuff that isn't supposed to be there, and maybe a real Mothman, like the hypothetical Bear Man and Fish Man, is actually one of these paratemporal travelers, then obviously you're going to have these men in black pop up there and try to get the timeline situation under control. And that's why, when you take something like what happened at Point Pleasant in the 1960s, we have a variety, a whole spectrum of paranormal activity and strange creatures, and then the men in black suddenly appear. So it could be that the men in black follow all this stuff around. That's their job. Not that they are causing these things to happen, but they're alerted to it when there's a dangerous timeline issue that needs to be corrected. They're not necessarily the bad guys at all. They might be doing damage control. And maybe that includes warning and silencing witnesses to protect the time travel secret. They might be weird, and they might look weird, but their overall mission may be just to keep order and protect the timelines. End quote. Did all that make sense?
It did.
You followed that?
I did.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Did you follow that, Shelley?
Yep.
Now, before we go to our next break, what do you think about that?
I mean, it makes sense. Like you said, going back and like tweaking one thing could have a big ripple and everything, and then if something's wrong, someone comes back not knowing someone else has tinkered with it and made a bigger mess, and therefore everyone's trying to fix things and over. You need some kind of police, so to say, to keep order.
Somebody at some point realizes what's going on here and has to step in. When we come back, I'll tell you about some experiences I've had that may suggest the timeline issue I was discussing. And Shelley, I want you to think about this as well. You've had a lot of weird stuff happen in your life. Has there ever been something odd that you've experienced that you can think of that may be the product of the paratemporal loop hypothesis manifesting? I'm Joshua P. Warren. It's the program where the unusual becomes usual. We'll be right back on Speaking of Strange. Temporal loop hypothesis. You know, temporal relates to time. So paratemporal is outside the bounds of time. That's why we call it the paratemporal loop hypothesis. And by the way, we're going to have a link up at speakingofstrange.com if you want to get a copy of this book, Plans for Time Machines That Really Work. Revised and updated edition. It's got additional government secrets revealed by Nick Redfern, Commander X, Scott Corrales, Tim Swartz, Project Camelot, Dan Burrish, and of course, Timothy Green Beckley. So, Shelley Wright of Wright's Coin Shop.
Yes.
You have had experiences when it seems like the timelines have twisted around a little bit in front of you.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. What's an example?
I guess about at least a year ago, maybe even longer than that, because it was when we were at the old lab. We were doing experiments in there. We were making plasma. We had this apparatus. And I remember that we did a lot of things. It melted a lot of things in that old lab. One of them was our apparatus, so the integrity of the structure was compromised, and we knew that maybe we need to get a new structure here because, you know, this thing could explode into a million pieces, and one of us could be hurt or killed or something. And I just remember being very, very upset, thinking we really need to do this, we really need to. And I remember having this conversation with you at about how you got a new apparatus, and I was so relieved. And then I don't remember how long ago it was after that you and I met up after you had a meeting one night. You had recreated the experiment. I didn't know about it at the time. You'd already done it. If I'd known then, I would have been really, really scared for you. But you had recreated the experiment, and I said something about, but you got the new apparatus, and you said, no, I didn't. I said, yes, you did. You told me that you did. I specifically remember having a conversation with you where you told me you had gotten the new equipment, because I remember even saying, look, I will pay for new equipment, just please get it. But you said it never happened, but it happened.
If it's the piece of equipment I was thinking of, it's a custom-made,
yes.
It was the vacuum chamber, yeah. I believe is what it was, and it was a custom-made unit that we could not really, in 24 hours or whenever we needed it, get a new unit fabricated.
Yeah, it was a pretty big deal to get the first one made.
It was a big deal. It was, but we really, really messed that thing up. But I remember that. And then I remembered how shocked that you said, no, we don't have a new one.
And that chamber is on display now at the Asheville Mystery Museum. It sure is, the same plasma chamber. Yeah. Now, Forrest, you brought up another point.
You were talking about this whole temporal experience thing. Well, think about déjà vu.
Right.
Déjà meaning again in French, and you, vu, means you in French. So basically, again to you.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, when you experience déjà vu, who says something's not happened to your temporal timeline itself? It's like maybe you originally died in the old timeline, but something's tweaked out to let you carry on, and you're experiencing the same thing, and then eventually the déjà vu passes, and you continue on. What if something like, I don't know, I mean, how many times have you experienced déjà vu? Half a dozen?
Many times. So imagine if you woke up one day, you know, you rolled out of bed, went through your usual routine, and you go out into the world, and everybody who sees you is shocked. They're like, you're dead, you know, and they're looking at a ghost. You say, what are you talking about? What do you mean I'm dead? Yeah, you died yesterday. Yeah.
And then you go back and realize, hey, on the way to work, I remember having a sense of déjà vu. Who says in the old timeline you didn't get into a car accident or have a heart attack while driving and offed yourself?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, or it almost happened, but it didn't for you, but it did for everybody else.
Right.
And look, it reminds me of the doppelganger phenomenon in that regard. You know, I've had some crazy doppelganger experiences to the point where, you know, there have been a couple occasions where I've been like, am I schizophrenic? You know, do I have like another personality that does things that I don't know about? But I was able to confirm that there's no way, because to me, my creepiest doppelganger experience was in Puerto Rico, not surprisingly. And I've talked about this on the air, so I'll make this brief, but I went to Puerto Rico with a bunch of T-shirts that I had made saying I survived El Chupacabra. Because when I first went to Puerto Rico, I wanted, as a tourist, to bring back a Chupacabra T-shirt, since that's where the Chupacabra comes from, and nobody sold them. So I saw a little money-making opportunity there. So I had some T-shirts made. On my next trip, I went down with a bunch of these shirts, and I started going around to various shops to see if they wanted to buy some and open an account. So the El Yunque Rainforest is a national park, and there are only two shops that even exist there. They were kind of grandfathered in. And I had never been to one of them before, and every single time I go to the El Yunque, I take a guide with me named Manuel. I've never been there without him. I don't even rent a car. I rented a car once when I went to Puerto Rico. The rest of the time, I just kind of hang out with the guide, and he drives me around. So I went into this shop with a bunch of these T-shirts, and I walk in, and all the guys there say, oh, hey, oh, great to see you. You know, they just kind of treat me like their best friend. And I was like, oh, this is a good start. And, you know, I'm trying to sell something, right? So I'm happy about this. And but they kept talking to me as if they really knew me, and I realized, well, you know, they're confusing me with somebody else. So there came a point when I just had to tell them, well, I've never been here before, actually. You know, you must be thinking of somebody else. And all the guys, ha, 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 you know, they just totally didn't take that seriously. And I said, no, really, I've never been to this shop before. I guess there's a guy who looks like me. And all of a sudden, there was this sort of silence that befell the group of men there, and they looked at me, and one of them said, "Yeah, you were here yesterday." I said, "Huh?" He said, "Yeah, you were talking about the chupacabra. You have chupacabra shirts, don't you?" I didn't even get in town till the night before. And Manuel, he saw this, and he was just like, he was shaking his head like, "I don't know." And once everybody kind of realized what was happening, it was that feeling like ice water down my back. They had seen me the day before, but I wasn't there. It was impossible. In my timeline, it was impossible for me to have been there. But they gave me enough details about who I was and what I was doing that they convinced me that I was there. And they bought a bunch of T-shirts. It's like, did I sell any yesterday? Can I have my check for that, please? But, you know, I've had those kinds of experiences, and it always happens the same way. You know, there used to be a store that I would go into on a regular basis, and every time I walked in, this guy would say, "Hey, Carrie, nice to see you." I'm like, "Carrie?" And I would just kind of play along, like, "I'm in a hurry, whatever, yeah, hi." And, you know, it's the same kind of deal. Eventually, one day, I say, "You're confusing me with somebody else. My name is Joshua." They never believe it when you reveal the truth, right? And, but once the truth sets in, there's this moment of tension where it's like they realize, well, somebody's crazy here, right? Somebody in this mix is insane. That's what they're thinking. I, on the other hand, realize, no, there's another option here. That reality has twisted a little bit, that it's not a nice straight line like we see on the calendar, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. You know, there are loops and twists and weird things, and sometimes you pass through one of these loops. And it seems like that if you think back on these moments sometimes just before something really paranormal happens, often people talk about a moment of absolute silence and stillness. One researcher, Jenny Randall, called it the Oz factor. When you're neither here nor there, you're shifting over to that other side of the timeline. And it's spooky. Maybe that's what some of this zombie stuff is about. I've got a story I'm going to read when we come back here about something horrible that happened in Long Island, New York. And it, yes, it has a connection to this zombie apocalypse. This stuff just won't go away. You're listening to Speaking of Strange. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren. The weirdness will continue after these brief messages. Minutes now of hour number two on tonight's Speaking of Strange. Next hour, well, we call it the Dark 30 Hour. That's when we dig into the more controversial and outrageous stuff. A lot of it has a sordid and seedy twist, so it's not for the easily offended, certainly not for the kiddies. So, you may or may not want to hear those stories, but that's why we save them for late at night. I am Joshua P. Warren. Here's a story from Long Island, New York. Of course, this zombie show on AMC is extremely popular. What's it? Dead Like Me? Is that what it's called?
No.
The Walking Dead. The Walking Dead. I don't really watch, you know, fictional shows like that, believe it or not. So they're the couple, boyfriend, girlfriend. They're both in their 20s. I think around 26. They finish watching Walking Dead, and afterward, they got into a big argument about the plausibility of a real-life zombie outbreak. So he apparently felt that this was very possible, and it probably was going to happen, that it was going to maybe be part of some military mishap. She thought it was just ridiculous, not taking him seriously. So the two got so upset that the girlfriend left the house, but they continued to fight over text messages. And then it says here in the story that according to her, she became concerned about his mental state and decided to go back to the apartment. It was an apartment. So she went back to the apartment to calm him down, but when she arrived, he was outside with a .22 caliber rifle. And apparently, according to the cops, quote, she tried to defuse the situation and calm him down and told him, let's just go to bed, end quote. She turned to walk up the stairs to the apartment, and at that point, he pointed the rifle at her back and shot her in the middle of her back. Mm-mm. And they rushed the 26-year-old young woman to the Long Island Jewish Medical Center. And despite having the bullet still in her, she is now in stable condition. Amazingly. Her boyfriend was promptly arrested and charged with attempted murder. And he was since ordered jailed without bail. The story says, in the opening sequence of The Walking Dead, the main character wakes up to eventually find out his wife has left him for another man. Here's hoping the alleged victim wakes up to find herself another one. Pretty crazy, huh?
Yeah.
Practically kill somebody over a stupid argument over a TV show. But, you know, those kinds of things, it makes you wonder, like, how inspired do people get by this stuff? You know, things they watch. I don't know. If they'd been watching a different show, how would things have turned out differently that night? I don't know, but obviously the guy's insane regardless. And here's a story from Rockland, California. Two California teenagers were arrested after they gave one of the girl's parents milkshakes spiked with prescription sleeping pills. Wanted to knock the parents out. Why? So that the 15-year-old daughter and her 16-year-old friend could get on the internet. They were apparently not allowed to be on the internet after a certain time of night, a certain curfew, so they make milkshakes for mom and dad to get on the internet. Apparently, the policy was to shut it off at 10 o'clock every night. That sounds like a very reasonable policy to me, even though I'm not a parent. Maybe that's why I'm not a parent. I don't have to have those policies in place. You know, you can kill people that way very easily. You go spiking somebody, especially with prescription sleeping pills. Man, that'd be spooky knowing you had a little kid like that in your house who would do things like that, huh?
Yeah. Well, like when I heard
drugs in
that story, I thought I heard it differently. I thought that it was a parent or the parents that had spiked their kids.
No, the kids spiked the parents so that the parents would be knocked out, theoretically, so the kids could get on the Internet. Yeah. Okay, well, when we come back, the Dark 30 Hour, yes, the more outrageous, the more controversial. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to the program where the unusual becomes usual. It is called Speaking of Strange.